The meeting is called to order. Today is Monday, February 13th, 2012. The time is 8:03. Present are Representative Kawasaki, Representative Seaton, Representative Peggy Wilson, and myself, Representative Alan Dick. We do have a quorum. First order of business today is another presentation by a school superintendent. We have Superintendent Rich Rhodes of the Wrangell School District. He has a few helpers with him, I understand, sir. Superintendent Rhodes, will you please come forward, introduce yourself for the record as you begin your testimony. Oh, excuse me, and before we forget, let's not embarrass ourselves and everybody turn your cell phones off. Here we go. You're forgiven. Your 70 times 7 isn't up yet. Here we go. No problem. Present are Representative Seaton, Representative Peggy Wilson, Representative Kawasaki, and myself, Representative Alan Dick, and we do have a quorum. Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Rich Rhodes, Superintendent of Wrangell Public Schools, Wrangell, Alaska. It's my privilege to be here today to share our story of Wrangell, Wrangell Public Schools, and we've got a good story to tell. So with that, I'd like to introduce Rinda Howell, who's a board member who will start next, and she's been our board member since 2005, and so she'll come up next.
Okay. Rinda, please just identify yourself for the record. We have somebody that's going to have to transcribe from this.
I'm Rinda Howell from Wrangell, and I'm on the school board. And it's my pleasure to introduce this year three seniors. And first we have Joe Cole, Lorenzo Silva, and Blaine Wilson. And I know we'll get that one. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly. And as each one of you speak, there's three male voices here, and somebody's going to be, you know, off scene trying to figure out who's who. Identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, I'm Lorenzo Silva, and we would like to thank you for the funding that you provided for our new playground at our school.
Sure.
It's very nice that we were able to upgrade our playground. The old one was very outdated and very dangerous. And the entire community uses this playground. It's very nice. It also coincides with our Blue Ribbon Award, which was kind of like a reward itself for the kids. Thank
you. We would also like to thank the legislature for the funding we got for our one-to-one laptop program.
Did you all identify yourself?
Yeah, sorry.
No problem.
Yeah, I'm Joel Cole, and we think it's a good thing to have since the world's becoming more and more technologically integrated. So having laptops for all the high school students to use really helps them become more familiar with the technological aspect of things.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm Lorenzo, and we would also like to thank you for the funding for the smart boards. These whiteboards have enhanced the students at our high school and our elementary school learning. They have allowed the students to be able to learn how to communicate and use technology such as this. It's very advanced, and we're very lucky to have such technology in our schools. Thank you.
If I could point out, we don't have smart boards here yet. You're ahead of us. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, this is Blaine. We'd like to thank you for the funding that we use for our career and technical education program. With this program that we have, we're able to work with both metal and wood. Our students are able to learn how to even build boats. With this student here in this picture, Tanner, he works as a commercial fisherman in Wrangell. And with this boat that he's learning and is building at this time, he's able to further his career.
Wonderful.
Mr. Chair, this is Lorenzo, and we would just like to tell you about all the different college credits that are enrolled in our in our high school. Mm-hmm. As you can see, it's a long list, and I have taken the ETT and the EMT, the EMS courses, as well as the English classes I will take, and all the math class credits I will also take. The Math 107 I'm currently taking now, and the Math 108 and 200 I'll be taking next year as a senior. These credits are very helpful for us, because in college, which is much more expensive in college, mm-hmm. we'll be able to get them out of the way.
This will give you a slide. Oh, sorry. Mr. Chair, I'm Joel Cole. And this is a brief overview of our test scores. And for reading, we have 90% or more at our proficient or an advanced level, third, sixth, and ninth. Writing, it's 90, and 80% through third, sixth, and ninth. And math, it's 90 and 85% at proficient or advanced at third and sixth, but it goes down to 76% in ninth. That's because the ninth graders at our high school have only taken Algebra 1, but throughout high school at 10th through 12th grade, the scores do go up as they've taken more advanced math classes and they get a better understanding of the curriculum.
Mr. Chair, this is Blaine again. In 2010 and 2011, last year, our graduation rate was 93%, and the last 5 years previous to this, our graduation rate has fluctuated only between 91% and 93%.
Mr. Chair, this is Lorenzo, and I would like to bring up our Superintendent Rhodes for any questions that you have for us.
Thank you. Why don't you ask the... However you introduce yourself, we need to be by a microphone. Do we want to pull up the sports chair?
You'll stand right there. Mr. Chairman, Rich Rhodes, Superintendent.
Welcome.
So at this point, we shared our story, and we are prepared for any questions, and thank you for the opportunity to be here. It was our privilege, and we look forward to our appointments in the next 2 days and getting out to meet and greet you folks and to thank you for what you're doing for schools.
I have a question. I mean, obviously, you're doing quite well. What can we pass on to other school districts? What are you doing that we need to emulate?
I think one of the things, you know, it's a great school system with a great staff and a great administration and past administration. This is my first year being in Wrangell, so I can't take credit for that. But this is a wonderful community who cares about kids and will put the resources in there. So I think our school board is very dedicated to our kids. Our local community is very dedicated to the kids. And I really believe we work really hard to maximize the use of our state resources. You know, I would be lying if I didn't say we're on the verge of breaking the stick. We don't know if we're going to be able to continue how much longer shop programs and art programs and some of the things in Wrangell that are really important to us when we talk about core classes and whether or not we can have five kids in a calculus class or a trigonometry class. Those are really difficult decisions that have to be made. And so, you know, you can either pay more people less or less people more, and there's no other way to split those dollars. And when we do that, something's going to have to go. So we're working hard to try to find some other ways to raise revenue. We're talking about an education foundation. We're here this week trying to ask you to really look at what we're trying to accomplish and do and to help us keep that message out there for schools. So, you know, for us, I really believe Wrangell's working very, very hard day and night. Those teachers are there all the time. And I believe that as I've talked with other folks across the state in several meetings this year, is Alaskans really care about kids, and we just want that message to be said that, you know, we want to continue doing what we're doing for kids and make sure that kids are first in Alaska.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Appreciate the presentation. I noticed that in a number of your presentations there were projects in there. Is your education system project-based? Is it traditional classes and then just projects such as the welding, just teaching welding, or is the math and science and all those things integrated into your welding or your shop or your other project kind of courses?
Mr. Chairman?
Mm-hmm.
Representative Seaton, thank you for the question. We are separated. We really do not do a thematic approach. We do have a lot of place-based education opportunities where we send kids up in large groups up the Stikine River. We're involved with a float school systems grant with other schools. We're also involved in where we have a float school where kids go out and work on some of the thematic approaches of mathematics and science. So we're doing more and more of that. Our strategic plan that we're just finishing up this month says place-based education, technology, and curriculum all need to be intertwined. And so that's our job, is to try to pull all three of those components together so that kids are getting those experiences and be able to do that hands-on and see the relevance of why that that building that aluminum boat is important.
Yeah.
And in mathematics, too, as well.
Follow up?
And I'd like to follow up on the concurrent college courses that are offered. Are those offered, are those distance ed courses, or are they offered by the high school teachers? How are those offered in the school system?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, thank you for that question. We do have some, we are involved with the Ackland Project and the Alaska Learning Network Project, where we have teachers in Wrangell who are providing courses throughout the state of Alaska and through rural communities, and that's been a positive experience. We also have one student last year who graduated, I believe, with 55 college units from high school that really took a lot of things. And so pushing that to that next level, to that next step, that they almost have an associate's degree when they leave is pretty incredible. So we would like to do more Alaska type online activities. We are doing some activities online from the lower 48. We would like to see more of that in Alaska and doing our own Alaska courses. And I think that work, I was in a meeting last night with Ackland, who's continuing to struggle to find those resources to make that happen. And we're pretty excited about that. We have another teacher who's going to be involved with that program again this next semester, teaching German. And so we also know that in our board strategic plan, languages are very important. And going back and finding ways that we can offer things like Chinese and like Korean, the Tlingit, we're looking at that component. What can we do within our community to provide more foreign language? So it's really important to Wrangell in the sense of doing other things too, like music and fine arts, that we believe that our kids are better educated and better prepared for college because they're required to take two semesters of music and or language or fine arts or photography or something to enhance that. So again, that gets back to that place-based education, that thematic approach to core curriculum and experience and things in life.
How many teachers in the school?
Mr. Chairman, we currently, I'm struggling on these numbers. I'm thinking we are running somewhere around 28 teachers, I believe.
And the if you have any turnover, I can't imagine a teacher wanting to leave. But do you have any retiree? What's your teacher turnover?
Teacher turnover, Mr. Chairman, teacher turnover in Wrangell is very low, and it's a opportunity. It's a great place to work in the we have a great community, great resources, great fishing. I mean, the place is phenomenal. I really feel blessed and privileged to be there. But we also have a very competitive, very high salary schedule. We play our teachers very well, and we they're able to climb up multiple years in that ladder. So we reward that salary step up multiple years. And so once you get into the system, you really don't want to leave because you go somewhere else, you're just not going to be as well compensated. But with that, again, comes that same thing. You just cannot pay teachers more and offer more programs. So something has to go at some point.
Okay. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. In your classrooms, especially the advanced ones, are you using the Khan Academy approach, or is it all is it kind of traditional lecture system, or is it Khan Academy and then practice in the classroom?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, I've got not have a lot of experience with that piece. I'm going to go ahead and, if that's okay with you, I'll refer it to one of the students who are taking the courses, and they can explain a little bit about what they're doing.
That'd be great.
Mr. Chairman, mm-hmm. I'm Joel Cole, Representative Seaton, and
For the welding and woodworking classes, we get the credit through that just by doing working on our welding and woodworking projects. But for the mathematics courses, our math teacher lectures on the particular subject, and then we take a test through the University of Alaska, and then she sends the test scores back to them so we can get our college credit that way through them. And I believe it works the same way with English courses as well.
Also, Mr. Chair, if I could add the... this is Lorenzo.
Thank you.
And if I could add, the ETT and the EMT programs are both through our local volunteer fire department by our paid trainee there. And it's very nice to be a part of that. And each one who is enrolled in the EMT and the ETT program, like myself, can also have the ability to join the fire department as a junior firefighter. It's very nice.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering, you students have had a chance to talk with some of the other students from across the state, and how do you feel your experiences are compared to some of the experiences the other kids have across the state?
Can you answer that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wilson, this is Blaine. I do know that with the shop classes, I do know that our school has better opportunity with larger projects than most schools in the state, but I don't know about any other classes.
Yeah.
And follow up?
Follow up. So at your shop, and I don't really know the answer to this, so at the shop classes, do you, is it more than one semester that you end up with your own boat, or how does that work?
Mr. Chair, our shop classes with the boats, you have to take a marine fabrication class before you're able to actually construct the boat. It usually takes the students about a year with multiple shop classes to work on the project.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if I may add, this is Lorenzo. If I may add, the shop classes, when you are building your boat, it is a team of students with the advisory of the teacher. And the one in charge, that's his boat, and he is the one then teaching the younger students, normally a freshman and sophomore, and it's normally a junior or senior building the boat. And the freshman and sophomore are helping the junior or senior on his boat to build it, which is a great learning system.
Representative Kawasaki, and then we do need to move on.
Sure, thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for being here. So the three of you are all seniors this year, then? Did I catch that? Just you could shake your heads. Or okay. Well, one of the things that we're going to be talking about later on this morning is the Alaska Performance Scholarship, which you may not have heard of, but it's we're going to have a full report presented before this committee. This morning, I was just curious if you had thought about going to college, if you thought about how to pay for it, if you've considered the performance scholarship. I'm looking at some of the numbers here, specifically for the Wrangell School District. 26 of your classmates who graduated in 2011, there were 26. Seven of them passed the criteria for the performance scholarship. Nobody took advantage of the performance scholarship last year. So I'm just curious if maybe you know those students personally. Maybe they decided to go somewhere else, not take advantage of the performance scholarship. They decided maybe not to go to college. Just wanted to hear what you had thoughts on the performance scholarship.
Mr. Chair, through the chair to Representative Kawasaki.
Lorenzo.
This is Lorenzo. For us, the three of us being juniors, two of us, Joel and I, will be going to a university for at least 2 years within the state. And for us, this scholarship is it's really nice. It gives us a lot of money to stay in state. And all three of us here are in the top 10% of our class. So we all have very, very good 3.5 or higher GPAs, and our SAT scores have been up. We're in the we're in the top tier of the scholarship, so we will be getting the most money we can out of that. And I hope to be able to take advantage of that, of the scholarship.
just to follow up. Did you have to change any classes mid-session, or did you? It said that I think 20% of the students had decided to change classes or retake standardized tests in order for them to. I think it said 16% said that they actually worked harder in school to increase their GPAs. Did you find that that was true for you? Or could you speak about other students that maybe have decided to go with the APS route?
Representative, through the chair to Representative Kawasaki, this is Lorenzo, and for us, we are given so many opportunities for credits to be able to get all we need to be able to get the classes that we need in order to qualify for the top tier of this scholarship. SAT scores, it's drilled into our heads to take the SAT multiple times throughout our junior and senior years. So we get to choose, kind of, so we're prepared for the scholarship through our school. And I know also many other students as well are in the top tier of this scholarship.
Mr. Chairman,
mm-hmm.
to Kawasaki, I would also like to add that I'd also like to add that I did definitely try to increase my GPA after hearing about the scholarship to be able to qualify for a better scholarship than I would have normally.
Thank you.
Okay, with no other questions, thank you, gentlemen. And
thank you.
We're all learning here. So 10 o'clock tonight, you're going to think, I should have said this, but it'll be too late. Okay, moving on, and thank you again. Good presentation. We'll next hear from Diane Behrens and Brian Ray on the Alaska Performance Scholarship Outcomes. And Diane and Brian, I appreciate you being flexible. We've been had to bump you around, and I appreciate you being flexible with schedule. We have a copy in our packet. Diane and Brian, will you come forward? Remember, do you want to answer questions as you go along, or do you want the questions at the end of the presentation?
Yes. Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Diane Behrens. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. And I think questions as we go is just fine. My role this morning is really just to introduce Mr. Ray to you and then be available. He, as our researcher, he tends to steer clear of policy discussions too much, but and so that's why I'm his wingman this morning. I did want to say in introduction that in 2010 we spent a lot of time in this committee discussing the scholarship. One of the positive outcomes of the proposed statewide scholarship program at that time was the ability to shine a bright light on Alaska's current situation in terms of student performance. In April of last year, the Joint Advisory Task Force this legislature established to examine higher education and career education readiness issues in Alaska produced its recommendations to move Alaska in a positive direction. In the category of strengthening schools, the task force charged the Department of Education, Labor, the University of Alaska, and the Commission with producing a proof of concept for a statewide longitudinal data system in FY12. I'm very pleased to introduce this report to you this morning. The 2012 Alaska Performance Scholarship Outcomes Report really does represent both that bright light we collectively agreed was essential and the proof of concept demonstrating the power and clarity of focus that can arise from education data sharing. With this first report, you will receive a current situation analysis. The timing of the scholarship's implementation was such that students had little time to alter their education's trajectory to ensure that they could be eligible for the APS. Within this context, I found the data to include both encouraging and sobering results. Regardless of its impact, the data is now available to the public, and I can assure you will inform the work of the Commission going forward. It's this type of information that will allow us, as Alaska's Higher Education Assistance Agency, to deploy our resources most strategically. And I do want to commend Brian Ray and his data management and research colleagues at Education, Labor, and the University of Alaska, whose work has made this report possible. And with that, I'll turn it over to Brian.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Brian Ray. I'm the Assistant Director of Research and Analysis at the Commission on Postsecondary Education. I do appreciate this opportunity to discuss the APS Outcomes Report. As Diane said, it does represent the efforts of several agencies, and in particular the staff at those agencies' various research sections. It includes at the Department of Education and Early Development, their Office of Assessment, Accountability, and Student Information. At the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, the Research and Analysis Section, and at the University of Alaska, the Statewide Institutional Research and Analysis Departments. Excuse me. The report contents reflect the input of the SB 221 Outcome Subcommittee recommendations from 2010. Given the short duration of the data that we have to work with, only one semester of post-secondary experience for APS-eligible students, this report contains only a subset of the performance measures that will become available in future years. The report presents the data in what we hope are those broad areas of interest to its readers. Where do APS students come from? Who's eligible and who's using it? Where were they attending? How much was awarded and for what types of enrollment? Also, is the APS affecting educational attainment? And does the APS affect workforce success? In this report, with these last two items, educational attainment and workforce success, we can only provide you with baseline information. And in future years, the outcomes of APS students can be compared to this baseline to determine how the scholarship is affecting students. Finally, we present results of a survey conducted near the end of the fall semester of APS-eligible students. One observation on the report, in order for us to share the data collected by the various agencies while still providing time for the work required to compile and analyze the information, this report represents and reflects Alaska High School graduation data as of October the 4th, 2011, and it also reflects APS recipients' data as of November the 11th. As of February 1st, we had seen a slight increase. There were now 206 students who had received APS funds. Moving on to the report, the first topic that we addressed was where APS-eligible students reside. In Exhibit 1, which had been referenced earlier, we summarized the APS eligibility and recipient data based on their school district. In terms of magnitudes, there were few surprises, with nearly 40% of the state's high school graduates. The Anchorage School District is by far the largest number of eligible graduates and the largest number of recipients, with Fairbanks a fairly distant second. At the other extreme, 12 of the state's districts had fewer than 10 graduates. And for clarification in Exhibit 1, we have to abide by rules, some of the federal regulations called FERPA, that require us to not disclose information that could provide personally identifiable information or tendencies about students. So as we look in that table one and you see an asterisk on the data, that does not necessarily mean that there was a zero number of students. Actually, there could be students, in this case we were looking at the Wrangell School District, who were awarded and did take advantage of the APS scholarship. The number was small enough where we felt that we couldn't report it without possibly broaching on that confidentiality of personally identifiable information. Also referring to Table 1, you'll see there that statewide that 29% of last year's graduates were eligible for the APS, but there were certainly differences across the districts. Ketchikan, Copper River, Sitka, Denali, and Kodiak Island districts each had eligibility rates that surpassed 35%. Unalaska, Petersburg, Skagway, and Haines had eligibility rates that surpassed 40%. In Exhibit 2, we present the data from the first exhibit by regions of the state, and a map of those regions is in Appendix E on page 32 of the report. I find this chart to be one of the more interesting ones in the report, actually. Because there are such large differences in the numbers of graduates coming from the various districts, it's easier to make cross-region comparisons using percentages of students. In Exhibit 2, we see that the South Central region had the highest percentage of graduates who were academically eligible to receive the APS award at 31.7%, and the Far North region had the lowest at 11.4%. Still, school district results within these regions differed, and for example, I'll use Nome. It's known as in the far north region, but it had an eligibility rate 5 percentage points above the statewide average. However, when we consider the percentage of those students who were eligible but who then went on to actually use the award, the far north and interior regions were the clear leaders. Nearly one half of the eligible students in those two regions actually took advantage of the APS award. The second topic area in the report was the characteristics of APS eligible and recipient students. As shown in Exhibit 3, female students were slightly more likely to be eligible to receive the APS than our male graduates. However, any gender differences seem to disappear when we consider the likelihood that an eligible student would make use of the scholarship. In all cases, it was just over one-third of both sexes when they were eligible, went on to make use of the APS scholarship. However, when we reviewed the graduates' eligibility by their ethnicity, we saw wider differences in the eligibility rates. On average, again, 28.8% of all the graduates were APS eligible, but only nearly 38% of Caucasian graduates were eligible, compared to 8.3% of Alaska Native and American Indian graduates. But again, interestingly, similar to the analysis of the APS usage by gender, once a student becomes APS eligible, the usage rates are very similar across the various ethnic groups, with still about 1 in 3 graduates taking advantage of the scholarship. Skipping forward to Exhibit 6, where we analyze the attendance patterns of high school graduates. This exhibit uses data obtained from the National Student Clearinghouse, which is a repository of data on students attending post-secondary institutions throughout the U.S. Of the 8,064 high school graduates in 2011, 30% attended a post-secondary institution in-state, and 17% attended an out-of-state post-secondary institution. However, there's a noticeable difference in the attendance rates for the APS-eligible population versus the ineligible population.
Could I get you to say that again?
Yes, you may.
You did wonderfully. I need that one more time, the last two sentences.
Of the 8,064 public school graduates in Alaska, 30% attended an in-state post-secondary institution, and 17% attended an out-of-state post-secondary institution. There is a noticeable difference, though, in the attendance rates for the APS-eligible population versus the ineligible population. We're finding that 83% of APS-eligible students pursued post-secondary education somewhere, while only 33% of the ineligible population pursued their post-secondary education. There are also noticeable differences in the attendance patterns of the APS-eligible population based on their award levels. While there's a larger economic incentive for the top level, higher level award students to stay in the state, since the top award level is twice the monetary amount of the lowest level, the APS eligible students at the top level are more likely to attend an out-of-state institution, while those at the second and third levels are more likely to attend in-state. For those who are interested, the National Student Clearinghouse data identifies which state students are going to. Not surprisingly, I would guess Washington and Oregon are the two states with attracting the largest number of Alaska graduates. The complete list is in Appendix B on page 25 of the report. Continuing to the next topic area, where are APS recipients pursuing their post-secondary education? I skip forward to Exhibit 9. Overwhelmingly, it was at one of the University of Alaska System schools. This table was created with recipients data, again, as of November the 11th. Since then, numbers for the UA system have increased slightly, 505, 339, and 46 recipients for the University of Alaska Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Southeast, respectively. Since this is only the first year the scholarships have been awarded, we don't have any historical data with which to compare these results to. However, I think that there were some expectations that there would be more post-secondary institutions represented in Exhibit 9. Although it's not broken out in that table, there were only 22 of these students who were using the APS to pursue a certificate, while the majority were pursuing a bachelor's degree. This leads us to the next topic here.
Oh. Representative Wilson?
Did the university see an increase in students because of this over maybe last year?
Through the chair to Representative Wilson. Their enrollment numbers, if I remember correctly, and this would be a question really for the University of Alaska, obviously, but their enrollment numbers, if I remember correctly, were very similar to previous year's enrollment. Okay. Those numbers do fluctuate from year to year, and we can't really divvy out how much might have been just the normal upward or downward trend.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. So there were only 22 pursuing a certificate, and does that mean that all of there is no one in here under the Department of Labor qualifications for programs? I mean, I see AVTEC would be Department of Labor, but other than that, any other programs of journey, you know, apprenticeships or any of those that would qualify for a certificated program, there was no one attending through or utilizing scholarship for any of those programs?
Diane Behrens, for the record, through the chair, Representative Seaton. The other institutions, the five that are listed down there, I'm not sure whether there was a vocational institution in those five.
Through the chair, there was not a vocational institution of those five. Some students are attending vocational certificate programs through the University of Alaska, and obviously AVTEC focuses towards that population as well. I don't have the data to delve into the reasons behind that. We have speculation as to why there may be a smaller number, and specifically for the topic of apprenticeship programs, oftentimes apprenticeship programs and the unmet need limitation of the apprenticeship programs are working unmet need variable, I believe, was included in that.
I get, Mr. Chairman, I guess I need to clarify the question. Were there other programs other than at these five institutions that would have qualified to receive APS students that basically had no recipient that it chose to attend there? And is that well advertised in the program?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, on page 27 of the report, you'll see a list of the approved programs. It continues on page 28. So there's actually quite a robust number of programs that a student could, if they so chose, attend using their APS scholarship. But as Brian indicated, if it's a program where through whatever structural means the costs are met, then they would not be able to use their scholarship. They could use it for instance, if it's there's no tuition but they're required to purchase tools, they would be able to use the scholarship for that. They could also use the scholarship to pay for their room and board while they're attending the program as well. So there are those variables. To your question about advertised, In the promoting of the APS program, we make it very clear that not only college but career training programs that are approved are available to students. What I don't know is whether or not the institutions themselves are actively marketing their programs to these students as a target population. I suspect that probably isn't happening just yet, but will over time.
And for the record, we've been joined by Representative Cisna. Okay, go ahead.
The next topic of conversation is sort of a lead-in to our recent discussion, how much in APS funds were being awarded and for what types of enrollment. So referencing Exhibits 10 and 11, Exhibit 10 graphically displays what I just mentioned, that the APS recipients were predominantly enrolling in bachelor's degree program. You'll see that over $2.5 million of the awards went to those students who enrolled in a bachelor's program. In Exhibit 11, you can see that they were also overwhelmingly enrolled on a full-time basis. When we reviewed the data back in Exhibit 6, we saw that the students eligible for the highest level awards were the ones who were least likely to attend in-state and would thus be eligible to receive an award. This tendency affected the amounts of APS expenditures by awards level. We would have expected those awards for the highest level to be quite a bit higher if we'd had a higher in-state college-going rate. Exhibit 12, while the greatest amount of APS awards still went to the Level 1 recipients, these differences would have been more dramatic if that higher percentage of Level 1 recipients had chosen to pursue their studies in the state. Going back to our regions as defined in Exhibit E, in Appendix E, Exhibit 13 shows the total funds awarded to students by their region and the average award amounts for each region. And for comparison purposes, the statewide average award was $3,402. Also note that this graph does include the payments made to the 35 non-public school APS recipients. In the next two topic areas, how does the APS affect educational attainment, and how does it affect the workforce success of students? These are areas that are much harder to judge at this time. Workforce data for the class of AY11 is non-existent, since these APS recipients have not had an opportunity to pursue their post-secondary education in order to attain more gainful employment. As for the APS effect on educational attainment, we have this only one semester of post-secondary education data available to analyze, and that data is still preliminary and somewhat subject to change. Exhibit 14 does capture some of the earliest available information, that information on students' needs for preparatory classes once they enter post-secondary education. Using information from the University of Alaska, a total of 3,631 AY11 Alaska public school graduates attended UA in the fall semester immediately following their graduation, and of these, 880 were APS eligible students. An analysis of the course taking patterns of the APS eligible population compared to the non-APS eligible population showed some interesting differences. For example, ineligible students were more than twice as likely to take a preparatory course than were the APS eligible students, at 64.8% requiring preparatory classes versus 27.4%. In terms of the average preparatory hours taken, ineligible students took 2.9 hours compared to 1 hour for the average APS eligible student. In addition, eligible students took more total hours as a group, 2.3 hours more than the ineligible students. So these numbers represent only the hours attempted in the fall semester and are subject to change. But still, if both groups of students completed their semesters as planned, the average APS eligible student would earn 12.6 credit hours applicable to a degree at the end of their fall semester, while the average ineligible student would have earned only 8.4, giving the APS eligible students a significant step up towards attaining their degree within a four-year period. In the future, additional measures of the scholarship's effects on educational attainment will become available. Examples include the 1 and 2 year retention rates for students pursuing a degree and also degree completion rates. Exhibits 17 and 18 use University of Alaska data for the entering classes of AY05 through AY07. And while this is not specifically APS data, it is data that we anticipate will be changing for the better because of the APS, and it provides a benchmark for our future analysis. In Exhibit 17, we see that for those students attending UA within 1 year of their high school graduation, approximately 3 out of 10 students do not show up for their second year, and approximately 4 out of 10 do not continue into their third year. Now, this does not mean that those students dropped out. Many may have attended UA to earn credits and transfer to another school. However, if the APS provides an incentive for students to stay and study in Alaska, we can expect these percentages to go up in future years. Finally, ACPE conducted a survey of APS-eligible students who'd completed a FAFSA and had included an email address in that FAFSA filing. This included slightly over 1,800 of the 2,300 APS-eligible students, and responses were received from 357 of the eligible students. Response rates ran from a high of 23% for the highest award level 1 eligible students down to 16% for award level 3 eligible students. Nearly 90% of the respondents were pursuing a degree, and 5% were not pursuing post-secondary education of any type at that time. Of those pursuing post-secondary education, just over one quarter were attending school outside of Alaska and were therefore not eligible to receive the APS last year or this year. Two-thirds of the survey respondents, about 237 students, said that the APS affected their decision to attend school, and nearly two-thirds of these students said that the APS affected their decision to pursue an education in Alaska. Over 20% said that it made them consider doing so, even though they eventually went to an out-of-state school. And over one quarter of the total respondents said it was extremely important in influencing their decision on whether or not to pursue post-secondary education. So, in conclusion, with this first ever APS recipients just finishing their first semester of their post-secondary studies, it really is impossible to determine the long-term effects of the scholarship. And it's too early to tell if the eligibility and enrollment patterns that we've seen in this first year will continue on into the future. In future years, as more data becomes available, additional assessments of the APS effectiveness will be possible, and a better determination can be made as to whether the program is meeting its intended goals. With that, I appreciate your interest in the performance report and would be happy to answer any questions.
I have a question. Of all the possible questions you could have asked, how many didn't you ask? That was pretty thorough.
Researchers want it all. We want everything. Sometimes we get reined back in by clearer heads, but we certainly know how to ask questions.
Thank you. Representative Kawasaki, then Representative Seaton.
Thanks for clarifying. So that just to go back to the first exhibit, Exhibit 1, so the asterisk doesn't necessarily mean that they didn't, under the APS number of APS recipients, doesn't actually mean that they didn't go. It's just, is there any way to get that data other than, or to disaggregate that data more than is already done here?
Through the chair to Representative Kawasaki, we can aggregate the data. Some of that was done with putting the school districts at a regional level so that we could report a little more specifically at the region. Therefore, we could bypass the minimum cell size requirements, which is what FERPA relates to or refers to. Okay. We could also take certain school districts and just roll them into an undisclosed number. So we can provide some data on that aggregate population.
Okay. And then I just had a different question. This is actually a different question. On exhibit number 4, dealing with eligibility and ethnicity, in the third column, the number of Alaska Natives and Native Americans eligible, that 8.3% seems statistically significant. And I was wondering if there were any theories as to why that number seems so low, where 40% of eligible or 40% of public school Caucasian graduates seem to be eligible, whereas only 8.3% of Alaska Native graduates seem to be.
Through the chair to Representative Kawasaki, because this is a 100% sample of a population, those students who are eligible to receive the APS. Statistical significance doesn't have to play into it. It is a different, obviously a much different number of those eligible students as a percentage of their ethnic group. I think we would have to look behind that at other factors that may be into play as to why those students weren't eligible to receive the APS. But yes, I mean, it is a noticeable difference in those eligibility by the ethnic groups.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Following up on Representative Kawasaki's question about aggregation of data, and can you've probably done this, so we just don't, have it here, is aggregation by size of school. That's one of the things that was very concerning to us as we created the scholarship, that smaller schools might be a disadvantage in offering of courses and those kind of things. So if you have that data, aggregated by size of school, that would be helpful to us in our policy determination. So I'd appreciate that. Also, a question on the email analysis. Was there a, did you get the responses also by those that qualified for a level 1, 2, or 3 scholarship? I guess I'm curious because a lot of the data that we're seeing here is basically the same data that I would expect from those students that are the best students in their school. I mean, we had three high school kids here that were, you know, in the very top of their class, and they've already, you know, they're already getting some dual credit scores and all those things. You would expect those kids to do very well. And those that are getting, you know, C plus or B minus, you would expect when they went to college they were going to have more challenge of taking remedial courses and those kind of things. So I guess I am trying to figure out whether the email responses, whether there was a difference in the level three respondents, that more of them went on to college that wouldn't have gone before. I would expect that almost all of the ones that were at the level one probably were going to college. Maybe there's some difference. I mean, we heard a difference here that, you know, one of the students from Wrangell had attempted to improve his GPA and those kind of things. But anyway, I was just wondering whether that data had been analyzed in that mechanism.
Through the chair to Representative Seaton, we did send out the emails based, we didn't identify any students, but we sent out three different groups of email surveys so that we would know that in a response to a survey, we would see a level one or a level two or a level three eligible student, not necessarily recipient. Of that, we saw some things, as I noted, that we had a higher response rates for the level one eligible students than we had for a level three. That we don't know the underlying reason behind that. It could have been just their willingness to respond to a survey. It could have been that they didn't pursue post-secondary education at all and felt that they didn't need to respond to the survey. They weren't receiving the APS, but that's speculation. But we did separate out the three populations by their eligibility status. You'll see in the report, actually, we have a few quotes from some of the students, and we can put in there that they were a level one, two, or three eligible student.
And so following up on that, so did you see a significant difference in the level one or level three students as far as those that answered that they, the fact that the APS was there, had either changed their behavior or had made them more likely to attend post-secondary?
Through the chair, much of what I was seeing in those types of results were the comments of the students, and we've included in the appendix both some positive and negative comments from those students. But we could see that there were students who were saying, I never could have afforded it. I never thought about pursuing post-secondary education until this opportunity became available to me. But I did not specifically analyze those comments based upon their eligibility levels, no, sir.
Okay. And one more? A different question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The requirement that we put in that all institutions accepting APS scholarships had to offer an advisory advocate program, how have we followed up on that, and is that a verification by the institution, and the institutions that are eligible that did not receive students, do we have any mechanism for following that?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, that is not a component in the program as it exists today. That is a component that is in HB 104, and if that bill becomes law, will be effective in the future. I would tell you, though, that at least on the Anchorage campus of the University of Alaska, they are very aggressively providing sort of 360-degree support to these students, along with their full cohort of entering freshmen. You may be familiar with the MapWorks process that they've implemented at UAA for the last 2 years, whereby it's a system of early warning detection where they engage the students in interacting with them online and look for, actually it's a predictive analytical tool. They look for danger signs that would alert them that the student is struggling socially, academically, financially, and will allow them to deploy the correct resources to them. So they're using a very aggressive strategy in trying to increase their continuation and completion rates at UAA specifically. So I think they're seeing very positive results.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back to Exhibit 1. I'm looking at the asterisks, you know, can you tell us, or maybe you can't tell us, the answer to this, how far down do you get before you draw the line? Like, I mean, do you get to 5 and then say, no, we're going to draw the line, or can you tell us that?
Through the chair to Representative Wilson, yes, to me, and it was 5.
Okay. All right, thank you.
And, Mr. Chair, if I could just respond kind of generally to the concerns expressed by Representatives Seaton and Kawasaki regarding the difference in ethnicity. You know, we don't know what the underlying situations were for those students who did not qualify. We don't know whether they failed to take the courses. We don't know whether or not they didn't take one of the assessments that would qualify them for this, whether it was a GPA, or whether that was simply not a focus of their secondary education program, and so it was not a goal of theirs to become APS eligible. But I think because this is a current situation analysis, it's going to be the change in those rates over time that will be the true measure of the effectiveness of the program. And what this allows us to do is to look at those populations where clearly they are struggling to achieve these same things, and then find out is it an achievement that is primary to them and their family and their community, and if so, increase the opportunities for them to achieve this.
Okay. If there's no other questions from committee, thank you, Diane and Brian. And I've went through this before this meeting. I think if I go through it 3-4 times, we could probably come up with some better questions. So I'm sure you're going to be available for all of us. Thank you. And it really is encouraging to see this type of result out of something that just happened so recently. So it's a real. Real positive. Okay, we had scheduled a continuation of a conversation with Chairman Esther Cox, a board chair, a Board of Education chair. She wasn't available this morning. She was here. We rescheduled, and she wasn't able to make it this morning. So if committee members have further questions of Chairman Cox, if we could get them to staff, and we will then forward those questions to her, and she'll give them to us in writing. But it seems like our schedule is having a hard time to line up. So we will not be meeting Wednesday, February 15. When we meet on Friday, February 17, we will take up presentation by Superintendent Pete Lewis, Fairbanks North Star Borough, and HB 313 student count estimates. And with no further business, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had on our desk here HD 6 iPads for literacy program. Was there a presentation on that, or is there someone to?
I think you're bringing that to our attention. This was presented down in the Alaska Association of School Board meeting, on the front page, everybody can see. Appreciate how big District 6 is, maybe a third of the landmass of all of Alaska, and as most of you are aware, we did manage. I worked with the Center for Digital Learning and managed to get iPads into the district with help from other folks. And it was a really, really crunched on time in terms of getting results. But there's some really exciting on page 2 of this document. You see some really exciting results for the iPads. And the hope is that we'll be able to. The positive result is in red, and you can see it's So anyway, I would encourage every one of us to read this and be aware, and I really do believe, even with the little bit of data we have out of 2-3 months, the results have been really exciting, and technology isn't the answer, but it's certainly a means to the answer. And so I would encourage you guys to look at the data, talk with the folks that are doing it, and maybe we can do that for the rest of the state in some to some degree. So thank you for bringing that up. That was for information. With that, Education Committee adjourned at 9:02.